This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
All right, welcome to another edition here of Reinvention Radio. This is exciting.
Why?
We're going old school today. We're going old school today, and we're doing that because now we're just going straight, like, back to blab. But we're doing it with just like the monitor and just let it play. Just let it play. Let's see what happens. Because at the end of the day, technology is supposed to be our friend. So we're going to make technology our friend again.
Yeah, because we've been bashing on it for a while.
We have. So there's Rich Otey and Mary Goulet. If you decide to come in, we'd love to see your beautiful face as well. But that is totally up to you. But you look great. You should totally do blab today. You're ready. You just didn't
I don't know. I always have to
today.
Like, ask.
Today. No, she looks great every day. No,
it was the way you said it.
That sounded wrong. All right. So speaking of amazing, beautiful people, did you hear? You heard about Peyton Manning's ass? Yeah.
No, I did not.
Did you, Rich? You heard about
just
it?
Just enough, but I figured.
Wait, did you hear about it? Did you? No. Oh my God. All right. So here's the deal. I don't quite get it. But evidently, like, some people just can't, like, retire in peace. The guy wins the Super Bowl. You know, okay, cool. Awesome. Congratulations. Now they're going to start bringing up some stuff from 1996. 20 years ago. They're going
to
start talking about stuff.
To shame him or?
To shame him. I'm thinking to shame him. Because ultimately, people just can't let people be happy. I think that's what it is. If you're too happy, like, the happy police come out. Do you know people
yes.
who have, like.
Yes,
I do.
I
think there are people, literally, who, like, go through training. I think there's, like, an academy for the happy police. Like, literally, you have to go through training.
And anyone can get in.
And there's, like.
There's no requirements. You just have to be an asshole.
As long as you're good at shaming, you're
yes.
in.
And you graduate, and they give you, like, you know, a diploma, which is like a stick.
You're right.
that you can whack people with. And they give you a keyboard.
So right? You can go on Yelp, you can go on all these reviewing places.
Right? And just start talking about anything you want. You know what I call that, by the way?
What?
I call that, you know, all right, how about this? You've heard this before. What do they call it when you're in a bar and you're drinking way too much and the girl who walked in as a 2 is now a 10? What do they call that, Rich?
Beer goggles.
Okay, great. Awesome. Right? And by the way, for those, and IOwnLiquor.com. So this episode of Reinvention Radio is brought to you by the good folks at Liquor.com. So here's the deal. When you go to a bar, not that you ever would, or this is mostly for our young, this is for our youth. We're gonna help our youth here with this right now. You go to
this
a bar.
This is a euphemism?
This is a euphemism right here. We're helping our youth. Okay, so you go to a bar, and, like, literally, you pick out the ugliest person in the bar. And you're like, there is no way on God's green earth I would ever be interested in that person. Like, never. I would never date that person. I would never go home with that person. I wouldn't let them touch me with their, you know, with Rich's thing. So, like, not at all. So, that's the one you kind of, that's like your, so in what do they call it? In statistics, they call that your delta, right?
Okay.
So, that's your delta, which is like your baseline. So, you see that person, you're like, oh, God. Like, literally, like, oh, God. Like, something happened at childbirth, and it's not, you know, there are
they
things.
They never grew out of it.
They never grew out of it. So you're like, okay, that's the one I would. So when you drink and you drink and you drink, and now you start looking around, you're like, ooh, there's that one. And she starts looking, like, really, really good. Then you know it's just, like, time to go home. So that's, like, that's the beer goggle thing. Okay.
That's
so it's something. Now, all right, what do they call it when you go to a bar, Rich? What do they call it when you go to a bar and you've been drinking and, like, all of a sudden you turn into the tough guy and, like, you want to take everybody on? What do they call that? Same word that begins it. What's the second word? So there was beer goggles, the beer.
Oh,
beer.
I'm blanking. But
muscles. Beer muscles.
Yep, there you
okay.
go.
Okay. So that's what I call it. I call it the finger muscles. Like, finger muscles. You get these people with, like, these really strong fingers. Like,
yes.
1, 2, 3, 4. And, like, they get to the keyboard and they're like, I am super strong. I am super tough. So that's basically what these guys have, evidently, because for 20 years they've been sitting on this story. And this was the time that they got strong enough to release it. So 1996, Peyton Manning. And, I mean, come on. You're in college. everybody's an idiot in college. Did you go away to school, Rich?
No.
Did you go away to school, Mary?
No.
Did you go to Catholic college too? You went to Catholic high school?
No,
right?
I did not.
You did not. Oh, your kids
did,
but you did not.
The first six brothers and sisters all went to Catholic school, and then my mom and dad ran out of money and sent me and my other brother and sister to public school.
Six brothers and sisters. That sounds more like Mormon than Catholic.
Eight.
Wow. Oh. And you grew up in Utah, yeah?
Minnesota.
Oh, it's kind of the same thing.
Catholic, Irish Catholic.
Rich, did you go to, you didn't go away to college. Did you go
here,
to college?
Here San Diego.
You went here locally. Okay, so when you go to college, you just do stupid shit.
Did you do stupid stuff?
Oh,
where'd
my
you go?
God, yeah, Southern Illinois University, Carbondale. That was like, at the time, like Playboy or whoever would do this, like these ratings of like party schools, right? So what is like, you know, what are the top party schools in the country? Like SIU, Southern Illinois University, Carbondale would always rank in the top 10, 20, whatever it was. So, yeah, so there was a lot. I mean, like literally people would travel from all over to come to SIU for their Halloween celebration because it was like that was the thing they were known for. There was a lot of things they were known for, but Halloween was like the thing. And it was ridiculous. It was out of control. You'd have like thousands of drunk teenagers. I mean, because, you know, 18, 19, that's basically what you are. And at 20, 21, you realize, damn, I was really dumb when I was 18 and 19. Those guys are just idiots now. So it's mostly just the 18 and 19 year olds that are blitzed out of their mind, turning over cars, setting things on fire. And it's like Mardi Gras because all the girls are like, "Wee, here you go. Yeah. Wee, here you go." And then when you see that girl who was a two, you're like, no.
Don't put that shirt down.
So here's the deal. So basically, in 1996, Manning said that he dropped his pants in the Tennessee training room to moon a male cross-country runner. So it was like guys just being guys, you know, locker room at college.
Being 14.
Well, or 20 or 18 or whatever Manning was in 1996. I guess technically he would have been 18, right? Because isn't he 38 now? Something like that?
Yeah, so, I think she's referring to when you get too many
two or
guys
more
in
men
room.
Together.
Yes, that.
Uh-huh. They turn into 14-year-olds.
Like Joel Kahn.
Yeah, got it. Sorry, yeah. like basically like right reinvention now? Radio every week. Yeah, okay, got it. All right, so Manning dropped his pants because he wanted to moon a cross-country runner, but here's what happened. A female trainer, Jamie Nawright, got in the way and saw his rear end. Okay, harmless enough, right? I mean, like, okay, big deal. You drop your draws, you moon somebody, and then, like, you know, some girl sees it. Okay, big deal. Well, that's something that you think is kind of just harmless and you just shrug it off or whatever. Here's where it gets interesting. So Norwright's attorney tells a much different story.
Oh, come on.
So she was crouching behind Manning, trying to determine why he was experiencing pain in one of his feet. So when entirely unprovoked, Peyton Manning decided to pull down his shorts and sit on Dr. Naughton's head and face. So it basically is like, talk about like he said, she said. So she was just walking by. I was mooning, you know, this guy. And it was one of those things where like, oh, she caught a glimpse of it. You know, I'm really sorry. Her side of the story.
There was contact.
He sat on her face. And it's like, can people really like have that? Like, I don't remember a whole lot of stuff.
Because she wants money out of him.
Well, she got money out
of him. Well, she's newsjacking for sure.
In August of 1997, so almost 20 years ago again, right? She got $300,000 from Tennessee as part of that that incident. So she actually got paid because Manning later referred to it as a practical joke. Interesting. So maybe the squeaky clean Peyton Manning and Eli Manning thing, maybe they're actually human, God forbid. Oh, and by the way, they are football players. You just don't have a really squeaky clean life when you're a football player because you are exposed to so much stuff. You got 80,000 people screaming at you. You got girls. I mean, the starting quarterback, Rich, the starting quarterback on a number one rated team at the University of Tennessee with 50,000 students or whatever it is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They have, I think they have one of the stadiums that can have over 100,000. Yeah.
Insane. So you got to think at the end of the day, he was given the green light on a lot of stuff that he probably, quote unquote, shouldn't have done, but he did, right? And so why on earth do you wait? So, Don, that's just what I don't understand. I just don't understand why if people have a beef with someone or literally a piece of beef with from someone. So if they, I mean, but like, did you really think that 20 years later, the public response was going to be any different? And did you think that they were going to be supportive of you for coming out again to release this information? So I don't know. I don't understand what the agenda is. That's where my head is at.
What are all the sports guys, the commentators saying about her doing this?
About her?
Well, bringing it back up or somebody bringing it back up.
Yeah. I mean, look, here's what they're saying about Pat. I know what they're saying about Peyton. And what they're saying about Peyton is, yeah, all right, like literally, like very cool. Like, why wouldn't you do something stupid? You're in college. You know, you got a girl squatting behind you and all your buddies are around. And, you know, like this is, you're not doing this like in the privacy of like a,
you're not,
you know,
a
training room. Well, evidently he was, because according to him, there was a cross country runner going by. But you're like in this room with all these guys and you got a girl sitting behind you. What else are you going to do? So like all the sportscasters, I mean,
it's almost always money driven. I mean, even down to the Tennessee, doesn't it say something with $300,000 getting given and no one knowing about it back then?
It does. So here's the thing. So to this day, actually, Norwright or whatever her name is, actually has a permanent disability from that incident. So it's a good thing we're going to be talking about disabilities here on Reinvention Radio after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're in a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, then the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Olscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step-by-step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many people get on the right path and clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step to realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting thereinventionworkshop.com today. No more delays. No more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to thereinventionworkshop.com today. That's thereinventionworkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Olscher.
All right, welcome back to another edition here of Reinvention Radio as we bring it back old school. And for us, old school is going back to Blab because we just live that way. We bring, like, and here's what I learned yesterday, by the way. We had Joel Kahn on Push Button Influence. Do you know Joel? Does that name ring a bell?
Yes, it does.
All right, sweet. And so, Rich, actually, you joined us in for that. So, Joel had a lot of interesting things to say, but I made a mistake. You know what I made a mistake on?
Nope.
What do you call somebody who, like, gets into something, like, really, really, like, right at the very beginning? You know how, like, they have that curve of, like, you know, late adopters and, like, laggards and, like, all that? Have you ever seen that curve thing? What did you think the first stage was? Do you know what the first stage is?
No.
Me neither. Because evidently I got it totally wrong. I thought it was early adopters. And I was wrong. Because Joel, basically he kind of bitch slapped me. And he said, no, dude, you are like really, really, really wrong. It's pioneers. So
nice.
So just in case you ever run into Joel Kahn, make sure that you refer to him as a pioneer. Because if you call him an early adopter, he's going to get really, really mad. But just food for thought. All right. So here's where it gets really interesting, which is we're going to have a very special guest join us right now. And actually, Deborah's on the line, so why don't we just bring her in. Deborah, you still there?
I am here.
You are there. Would you consider yourself to be a pioneer or an early adopter?
I was going to say bleeding edge, but...
that's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's blood everywhere.
That sounds like a pioneer.
Now it's turning a little gory.
Can't you tell? You always know who the pioneers are because those are the ones that have the arrows in their back, right? I mean, that's kind of like the... You've seen that cartoon somewhere. All right. So, Deborah, by the way, I am super Deborah's of Deborah. Can I tell you why? Deborah, can I tell you why I'm like super jealous about you and certain things right now? Do you have any ideas why?
It's not the beer goggles or the beer muscles. that was learning for me. I didn't know about that. So.
And you
Thank
know
you,
what,
Rich?
Right, and that is why people tune in to Reinvention Radio every Thursday from 12 until 2 Pacific with Mary Goulet, Steve Olscher, and Rich Otey, and occasionally White Wade and Kelly. But you have a Wikipedia page. Like I swear to God,
that's cool.
It is cool. Because, like, I keep thinking, like, one day in the back of my mind, I keep thinking someone is going to start a Wikipedia page for Steve Ulscher. And you know what happens? Nothing. Ever. Like, I have...
Do you want them to start one about you?
Hint, hint. Yeah. I want a Wikipedia page.
Yeah, I just put it on my to-do list, Steve.
Thank you.
I've got it on my to-do list now.
Thank you, Deborah. That is amazing. See, all these years together, guys, and Deborah steps up immediately and says, I'll provide a Wikipedia page for it. That is awesome. All right, so Deborah, for those who don't know you, you are certainly an advocate for the rights of persons with disabilities. And by the way, that's the beauty of having a Wikipedia page, is now I am going to just read what the Wikipedia page says. It's got to be, if it's on the internet, it's got to be accurate.
Right,
so,
Al Gore?
Right, Al Gore. Exactly. So talk to us a little bit about just kind of who you are and how you got into the work that you're doing around disabilities.
Okay, and thank you guys for having me on. I'm very, very honored. I get a big kick out of your program. So, but it all started when my husband and I had our first child. So our daughter now, and I'm telling my age, but my daughter's 28 years old, and then I also have a 26-year-old son. But Sarah was born with Down syndrome, and we didn't realize it at first, which is sort of unusual. You usually find out before birth or right at birth, but we didn't find out till she was 4 months old. And when they told us, the doctors told us about it, it was such a sad, tragic story of what her life was going to be like. Oh, she's not going to walk. She's not going to talk. Oh, be careful. She'll get pregnant when she's 16. By the way, any girl at 16 might get pregnant. There's things you can do, like avoid, you know, the beer goggles and things like that.
Wait, and let me just interrupt you for 1 second, because I read that, and that is the most ignorant shit I have ever, ever heard. Because your daughter had Down syndrome, is there even a higher propensity for pregnancy among those with disabilities?
No. I mean, I don't believe so. I've never heard about it. I think that that's just a... It's like a woman thing, you know, pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
So,
ignorant.
This is a 4-month-old baby that you're giving us maybe some devastating news about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so why are you telling me about when she's going to be 16, she'll be promiscuous? Oh, I don't know what Jesus. That has to do with anything.
Yeah, and I agree. Honestly, it's just about the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And I can tell you, my wife actually had a son when she was younger than 16. And so there you go. I mean, it's like, that's just about the silliest thing I've ever heard. Okay, so please continue. So your daughter was, and by the way, some people choose to do the test, I guess, because you can actually do a test, right, to know in advance if your child may have a disability. Is that like mandatory? Is everyone required to take the test? No. How does that work?
Well, it's I was 28 years old, which was very young, and it's the age of my daughter now, but they don't generally do it unless they suspect some kind of risk.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no family history. I was young. I was healthy. There was really no reason to do it. Now, when I got pregnant with my son, everybody bullied me into doing the test with my son because there was a history there. But no,
I'm sorry, Deborah, can we just talk about that for 1 second? Because let's just say, hypothetically, you had done that test with your son and it had come up positive.
Right.
What would you have done?
Well, and I will tell you, I did finally give in to the pestering and the bullying, and I did the test.
Mm-hmm.
And then they told me all the things that could go wrong, which I had never considered. So for 3 weeks, I had to wait. But if I had a child with a disabilities, my second child, I would have given birth to that child with disabilities and used, you know, everything I was learning from that child to change the world, just like I'm doing with my daughter.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe just because she has a disability, she's broken or it's a tragedy.
Mm-hmm. You have a wonderful expression. It's about the blessing of your daughter, but you word it very, very, very nicely. What is that expression that you use?
Well, I'm not exactly sure which one.
I'll find it then.
But
yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Thank you. but I will say, Steve, that my daughter has been a great teacher to me and to many other people. And she's not a tragedy. She's not broken. She's not broken. She has a lot to offer the world. She has an extra chromosome. Well, maybe that's cool to have an extra chromosome. So to decide that somebody is broken because they are born with a disability, which is about 20% of the people, or they acquire a disability after they live their life, including those football players, you know, that are getting really bad traumatic brain injuries.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean a person's broken. It just means that you might do things differently than another person.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting because I have a friend whose daughter has Down syndrome, and they do everything with her. I mean, you know, they take her everywhere that you would take, you know, a healthy child. They do the same sort of playing games with her, and they have a wonderful relationship. It's like they don't even see her in that way. I mean, they're just her daughter.
How old is she?
Oh, man, she's probably in her 20s now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's probably in her 20s now. Is there a shorter lifespan for those who have Down syndrome?
Well, there is a shorter life. And so I'm going to answer it two different ways. We have seen that there is a shorter lifespan, but remember, we just stopped institutionalizing people with disabilities over the last 30 years, right? So if you take a child from their family and you put them in an institution, they're generally not going to have as long of a life as somebody that's not in an institution. So we're sort of figuring out as a society right now what the life expectancy is of a person like my daughter with Down syndrome, because we're seeing people with Down syndrome living longer than ever before once we bothered to realize that they weren't broken, they actually could add value. I'll tell you another thing. I'm writing another book, but on who gets to decide normal. But
yeah, for sure.
One thing that we have found is that families that have a family member with Down syndrome have a tendency to self-identify themselves as being happier than families that aren't lucky enough to have a family member with Down syndrome.
Mm.
So, you know, and people with autism, deciding that a person with autism is broken instead of saying, wow, but a person with autism uses their brain differently than other people. So the advantages to society of letting people be who they are, you know, and to figure out things. You were talking about innovations earlier and technology. A lot of really cool technology has been created by and for people with disabilities that all of society is now using, including text-to-speech. You know, your car talking to you.
Right.
That was created for people with disabilities. So people with disabilities, they might do things differently, but they're not broken. And maybe they can add great, great value, because we know for sure they can, to society.
You know, it's interesting because the book that I wrote, What Is Your What? Discover the One Amazing Thing You Were Born to Do, which you can get for free at whatisyourwhat.com/free. Was that a shameless plug? That
totally.
Was a shameless plug.
Totally.
Okay, you know, I talk about, I talk a lot about how you have to be clear on what your core gift is, on the vehicle that you use to share that gift with the world, and then who the people are that you are most compelled to serve. I mean, that is the What Is Your What equation. And what I have found, and probably this was the case for you, I would imagine, is that you never could have guessed before your daughter was born that the people you would be most compelled to serve would be those with, quote unquote, a disability, right? Because,
right.
I mean, how could you even have predicted that? I mean, it's just so interesting how you have made this into your life's work. I mean, you would define this as your life's work, yeah?
Yes. And I didn't think I knew anyone with a disability before my daughter was born with Down syndrome. It never occurred to me, ever, that I could have. I'm not one of those people that laid in bed and thought, oh, no, it never occurred to me. And then when they told us she had Down, and we were sad and we had to go through the grief cycle and everything else, but she has been such a blessing in our lives.
Yeah.
And I get to work with all these amazing people all over the world. I was in the mortgage banking industry, which was great and everything, but in middle school, when once again we were told what she couldn't do, she couldn't join the workforce, I thought, I'm not going to be part of the problem. I'm going to be part of the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, how hard is it to be an entrepreneur? It's really hard, by the way.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, very hard. All right, well, let's
really
do this.
Hard.
We're going to take a quick break here on Reinvention Radio, and we will talk more with Deborah about empowering those with disabilities right after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're in a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many get on the right path and be clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step for realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting TheReinventionWorkshop.com today. No more delays, no more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to TheReinventionWorkshop.com. That's TheReinventionWorkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulsher.
All right, welcome back to Reinvention Radio with your host, Steve Ulsher, along with the lovely round-eyebrowed Mary Goulet and Arwitote and White Wade is walking somewhere around here. All right, so we've got Deborah Ruh. And by the way, am I pronouncing your last name correctly? I hate butchering people's names throughout the entire show. Is it Ruh?
It's Rue, like kangaroo.
Uh-huh. I knew I was butchering it. So I found your quote. And actually, your quote was, it was part of your application when you applied to be a guest here on Reinvention Radio. And thank you for doing that. You do a lot of speaking. You speak all over the world. You've spoken in Kenya, in Egypt, Turkey, Thailand, Costa Rica, Germany, Canada, and many other places. And you were talking about how in Turkey, after your speech, and sadly, or ironically enough, I guess that was the day that Ankara was bombed, a very sad day, several women came up to you and said that it never occurred to them to think of their children with disabilities as blessings. And it's just a really, really interesting mind shift. And at what point did you shift? Like, do you remember when you shifted from, oh my God, this is going to be a burden on me and my husband, you know, for the rest of our lives? Because, I mean, that has to go through your mind. I mean, you're and, a yeah, human
part
being.
Part of the process.
It has to go through your mind.
You're right. And yeah, I will tell you, it was pretty soon. And I'll tell you, I'll confess something else. I never, that I could remember, ever met a person with Down syndrome, but I'd seen people with Down syndrome. And when right after I gave birth to my daughter, I mean, right afterwards, I had this weird little thought floated through my mind, like, boy, your baby looks like she has Down syndrome. And I was immediately dismissed it for morphine, because I don't know what a baby looks like with Down syndrome. I remembered that little thought 4 months later, but we did have to walk the process. But I had already fallen in love with this 4-month-old baby, and yeah. So nobody was going to tell me she was broken or so. But it did take a while. I didn't want people to realize she had Down syndrome at first. I would be lying to say I didn't have to walk the process, yeah. But she was such an amazing little baby, and she's an amazing young woman, and she's just in love with life, and she's in the moment, and she has all these really powerful spiritual practices that isn't a practice. It's just part of who she is.
Mm-hmm.
So, gosh, she's been such a blessing in our lives. We're so much happier because she's in our lives.
And so you actually started a company, right? I'll let you tell it. So talk about the company that you started and how it kind of plays into all of this work around helping and empowering people with disabilities.
Well, I started two companies. I had a technology company called Tech Access, and over 80% of the employees were technologists with disabilities.
Wow.
And it got real wobbly during our financial crisis, and I merged it with another company. And then 3 years ago, March 1st, I created Rue Global Communications because I didn't know what I wanted to name it, so I just put global, and it just exploded. And I work with countries and corporations and very large multinational corporations and United Nations agencies, helping them create policies and programs that empower people with disabilities, and really focus a lot with corporations on making sure they're thinking in an empowering way about including people with disabilities, because the Americans with Disability Act has a very broad definition of disabilities, and so we all want to be included. We all want to find our what, you know, what is our what? You know, why are we here? Which is what you're doing, Steve. We all want to do that, including people with disabilities. Most of us want to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's what, you know, we do. We're very active on social media, as you know.
Tweeting
a lot about you guys.
Yeah, well, no, we appreciate that. And so let's go to not necessarily your definition, but how is it defined when someone has a disability? Like what is the definition of someone who has a disability?
Well, in the United States, it's a very, very broad definition. In most of the other countries, most other countries except the United States, have signed and ratified the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. We have signed it but not ratified it in the United States because, you know, we like to fight each other about everything.
Yeah.
And so in the U.S., it's very broad. Diabetes, cancer, dyslexia, Down syndrome, autism, blind, deaf, hard of hearing. It's very broad, including obesity is in there now. So the Americans with Disabilities Act is a very broad definition. And now our government is telling anybody that's a federal contractor, which is most corporations, that if you want to do business with the United States government, 7% of your employee base has to be people with disabilities. And so we're actually now starting to really hold employers accountable for making sure they're including people with disabilities in their workforce. And that's not a bad thing, because many times people with disabilities, things aren't accessible to them, technology, buildings, data, and so they're problem solvers. Mm-hmm. So don't you want problem solvers working for you, innovators?
Yeah.
That's often what you're going to get by employing people with disabilities in your workforce.
And is there, and I apologize if this is an ignorant question, and a lot of questions that I ask are, so just kind of throw it in that bucket if it is. But is there an IQ difference between someone who has a disability? And in other words, you had 80% of your workforce fell under the, you know, I mean, they would be in the category of having a disability. Is there a measurable difference in either skill or IQ or anything? Where is that why, I'm trying to understand, is that why an employer wouldn't hire someone with a disability? Because it is, I guess, scientifically proven that there is, in fact, a lower capability of performance or something of that nature. So I guess what I'm trying to do is I want to blow up that sacred cow, Mary. That's what I'm trying to do here.
Yeah. No, it's a great question. I'll tell you that disability is such a broad term, and so there's the intellectual or cognitive disabilities, like somebody with my daughter with Down syndrome, and yes, she does have a lower IQ than, what is considered the normal IQ. There's physical disability. Somebody that's in a wheelchair, or maybe they're blind, or, you know, deaf. Typically nothing is wrong with their brains. They're probably smarter than a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. There's mental health disabilities, depression, bipolar, things like that. And so they're broken down into different categories. Part of the reason, the reason why more people with disabilities aren't being employed is fear. It's the fear of the unknown. If I hire a person with disability and they don't work out, well, I certainly can't ever let them go. And we've seen that with other segments of diversity as well. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of fear of understanding, how to accommodate these individuals. Now I'm going to do a shameless plug, Steve. I just wrote a book called Uncovering Human Capital, Hidden Human Capital, Uncovering Hidden Human Capital. And it's focused towards employers to help them understand that, by the way, they've already done all this. All they have to do is tweak their processes just a little bit, and they can be more successful with including people with disabilities in their workforce. But there's a lot of fear and misunderstandings about this and how broad this is as well.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Go ahead, Rich.
I was going to say it's beautiful to see how this is unfolding, and there's a lot more of you out there than a lot of the world thinks about. Have you heard of that one autistic kid, Gutsy or whatever, that his father built the whole car wash around, and they employ all autistic children?
Yes, it's amazing. And you know, the Marriott just built a hotel, and it was built from the ground up using employees with disabilities. From the ground up building it, they're staffing it fully. It's amazing. And the Marriott, one of the Marriott brothers has a child that's blind, they're probably an adult now, but one in three families in the United States are impacted. Somebody in their family has a disability.
Mm-hmm.
These are big numbers.
Well,
no, these people aren't, they're just not wasted. They're not, they have potential. What can we learn? I remember when the oil was gushing. Remember the oil was gushing in the Gulf, and I'm like, oh, somebody stop it. And I thought, would somebody go find somebody with autism who thinks differently to go and solve that problem?
Hmm.
Because there's such value in the beauty of our brains and the way our brains work. And so just because maybe somebody with autism isn't going to look in your eyes when they shake your hand doesn't mean there's not this amazing brain back there that can add major value to society and certainly to the workforce.
Yep.
So this is a great example, Rich.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just hoping, honestly, that when they were building that hotel, they just didn't give the blind guy the nail gun. That's just, I'm just like hoping, you know? Like,
or the measuring stick.
You know how like on construction sites they have that sign, which is like, you know, 340 days since our last accident. It'll be like 312 seconds. Just kidding. Them just jokes. All right. And so let's go and talk a little bit about then Rue Global Communications and what you're doing there. Because do you find resistance around these companies then hiring? And is that some of the work that you do in terms of convincing them otherwise? Is the resistance there? Is it real?
Well, I'll tell you, there has been a lot of resistance. But what I'm finding now is the biggest of the biggest companies come to me. And they're like, okay, we want to frame this out. We want to do it right. There's a lot of litigation, around this. And the real proactive companies, and I'm going to throw out some good names, HP, Canon, Boeing, just for example. Mm-hmm. There's so many, IBM, Microsoft, that are really, really trying to make sure that technology is accessible, that all the built there are no built barriers, physical barriers, that they're including people with disabilities in their workforce. So there's a lot of really cool things happening with the very large multinational businesses and also smaller businesses. I don't work with companies that need to be convinced that people need to be included anymore. I'm blessed to finally be in a part where if you need me to convince you why it's a good idea, go talk to somebody else.
Right.
If you know that this is the right thing to do and it's good for your bottom line and for your shareholders and your brand, I'm the person to talk to, I think I'm getting cheeky in my older age. But.
Right. And as well, you should, because, I mean, we've got to do something here to really draw that line and say, look, enough is enough. So more on Reinvention Radio right after this with Deborah Rue.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're in a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, then the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Olscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step-by-step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many people get on the right path and clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step to realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting thereinventionworkshop.com today. No more delays. No more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to thereinventionworkshop.com today. That's thereinventionworkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Olscher.
All right, welcome back to another edition here of Reinvention Radio. And what a lovely day here. What a lovely
day.
It's
awesome.
You know, it's a beautiful San Diego day. What is not to like?
Whoa, it's raining.
I'm speaking for my wife. My wife loves the rain. She's a funeral director. She loves the rain and
the
darkness.
And the Adams family.
It's true. Maybe that's what we have to do. We have to cleanse our house. Maybe that's what's going on. Because we're still trying to sell our house. So maybe we have to cleanse it.
Sage it or something.
We're going to sage it, yeah. So all the marijuana smoke doesn't count?
Actually, that would be a great... Like, Dad, what's that smell? Oh, it's the sage. I saged the house.
Right? Oh, that's a good thing. Okay.
It's a similar...
So every
fragrance.
Night at 9:30, I am just staging the house.
Yes.
All right, I got it. All right, let's bring Deborah back up here. And
that was a wonderful segue.
It was. Hey, Deborah, how you doing? Are you quote unquote
saging
the house right now? Yeah, not so much. Okay, all right. So let's do this because I have a question that I think probably at the end of the day you're one of the few people that can answer this, which is do you have to pay someone with a disability less money because they have a, shall we say, a little bit of less capability? Or how does that work when you're talking to the companies?
That's like, a touchy one.
It is a touchy one, but I'm wondering, like, legally, do you have to pay them the
minimum wage?
Same, or can you get away with paying them a little bit less because they're a little bit less capable?
I think her point is that where they lack in some areas, they might bring greater good for the masses in other areas.
Well, here's the really good news. We can ask Deborah right now.
Right? No, you and I are going to debate it out, Steve. No, Deborah,
yeah,
what do you think?
I think it's a very brave question.
Brave.
And I think Mary, you're right.
Some might even call it a bold question.
Mr. Bold.
Yeah, they might. Brave. They might.
But I think, you know, I appreciate that you're being authentic about this, Steve, because Mary's right. The reality is, no, you have
to
pay.
Mary is
minimum
right.
Wage. Like, Mary is right.
Stop it. You don't have to say it again.
Okay, Diane.
Yeah, got it.
That can be your new show logo. Anyway, but you cannot pay. There's been a lot of controversy about people with intellectual disabilities getting paid just ridiculous wages, like 20 cents an hour and something ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of work, and people have to be paid minimum wage.
Yeah.
And so there's still some exceptions, but a lot of those exceptions are going away. But the reason why I say Mary's right is because what we're realizing that if, you know, you want to make sure people are qualified to do the job, and then you want to pay them the same that you pay other people, which, by the way, we aren't doing for women right now, but that's a whole nother segment.
Right.
But it's the same thing. And so you take Caucasian women, they're being paid less than men, but then you take women of color, they're being paid less. And then you take women with disabilities, it's really mm-hmm. terrible. Mm-hmm. And so there is a misnomer that people with disabilities are not qualified to do your jobs and are going to, that you have to carve up the jobs and that they can't perform in the same way their peers are. That's not true, and we know it's not true. We've done a ton of research. I work with Georgia Tech. They've done a lot of great things over at Georgia Tech. There's a program called AMAC, A-M-A-C, and they've done a lot of research over there that have proven over and over and over again that not only are employees with disabilities performing as well or better than their peers, but they get to work, you know, more often on time. They don't have the same absenteeism, and they're very, very loyal. Now, to be honest, they might be partially loyal to you because not all employers understand the value of this amazing pool of people. There are 54 million Americans with disabilities in the United States. It's a large segment. There's 1 in 7 people with disabilities all over the world. So you're talking about a lot of people.
Yeah, there's 1 in 4 in this room right now. The question
and
is,
and it rotates weekly.
Good. My odds just got better when Wade walked in. So.
Rich, you had a question for Deborah?
Well, I was going to say, Deborah, earlier you were mentioning that families that have child with disability in it tend to say they're happier over time. And I'm wondering if that may have to do with sometimes when you get caught up in your own self and you think too much about what's going on and your problems, and then you look at what somebody else is going through and you see how they triumph and still smile and still have great energy.
Mm.
And I'm wondering if that kind of plays off in the workplace too. And mm-hmm. It's kind of a two-part question.
Well, and you know what? I think that's a great, great point. And I've told this story before, but I'm going to tell a little story, and I don't have my numbers exact about Canon. Canon decided outside Chicago that they wanted, this was about 10 years ago, they wanted to take cameras that were being returned by consumers, and they wanted to dismantle them and figure out what pieces were good, what needed to be thrown away responsibly, and which ones could be reused. So they used about 20 people with different disabilities to do these programs. The first year they made like $19 million, which is pretty decent, in saving money and everything. But the particular plant outside Chicago, the entire productivity for the whole plant went up by like 35%, 36%. And they compared it with, why did this one plant do so well? The only thing they had done differently was employ this group of about 20 people with intellectual disabilities. And they started surveying the employees, and the employees said, you know, I'm really proud to work for Canon, so I can go to lunch with Joe with Down syndrome. It makes me really proud. And when, you know what, when we're proud as Americans, we work harder. We're more productive.
Yeah.
So it's good for the workforce. And we've got to break down some of this misinformation that we've accidentally created here.
But
that they're not valuable workers. It's not true. We know it's not true.
I would think, though, that some companies have got to be a little bit gun-shy, right?
Because they are.
Yeah, but that's an education on the human resource part. So if you're speaking to human resource people and saying, this is the message, take this to the higher up, the C-club.
I mean, there's enough fear on when you're hiring of, like, if I have to let this person go, that I'm going to be sued, that they were, you know, terminated for wrongful cause, I mean, or whatever. And, like, and in this case, if you let someone go who has a disability, then I am sure that there is this whole conversation going on in their heads.
But that's
like,
just a lack of education. They just don't know. And that's what Deborah's about. Deborah's the one that has to go out there and, hey, let me educate you. It's not that scary. They're loyal. They do this. They do that. And, you know, the whole picture.
And they're getting sued for not doing it now. You're going to get sued if you don't employ people with disabilities, and you're going to be fined by the government. And there's ridiculous lawsuits going on right now, ridiculous, not just about employment, about websites being inaccessible, and there's a lot of lawyers making a lot of money on this.
Well, you're very articulate.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, let's do this because we're coming up against the clock here. So why don't you let folks know how they can get a hold of you? And you said you got a book coming out as well, or you already have a book. So why don't you talk about those just a little bit, and then we're going to wrap.
Well, thank you. My website is www.ruhglobal.com, and I'm all over social media at Deborah Ruh, D-E-B-R-A-R-U-H. And I do have a book on social media called Finding Your Voice, which really talks about how you use social media to do social good. I believe in social good, but it's a few years old now. And then I have one that's coming out in the next month or so, which is Uncovering Hidden Human Capital, which is a journey of corporations all over the world that are actually successfully employing people with disabilities in very meaningful ways.
Yeah.
Awesome.
For example, SAP, it hires people with autism to be programmers and testers and quality control people. They're having wonderful successes, for example.
Terrific.
Awesome, Deborah.
Terrific. All right, Deborah Ruh, that was really, really, really amazing.
Informative.
And it's a conversation that we have to have, you know, because it's like there are so many people. We're talking about millions and millions and millions of people.
Because if we weren't working here, where would we work?
Thank God. You know what? I'm glad Wade has the policy that he has, because he still lets people like me get on the microphone. And Lord knows, as you've experienced now, I've got some serious disabilities. All right, guys, we will talk to you next time here on Reinvention Radio. Keep subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast. I'm Steve Ulsher, Mary Gallet, Rich Hotel. We'll talk to you guys next time.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Ulsher, visit reinventionradio.com.